Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Ray Kugel reporting. The new year begins. People welcoming the new year with fireworks, parties, and other festivities. But fears of terrorism mean heightened security in some places or cancellation of events in others. At the stroke of midnight in Sydney, Australians were treated to a spectacular fireworks display lighting up the city's famed harbor. Britain welcomed in 2016 with giant fireworks shows in London and Edinburgh. In contrast, police in Munich, Germany, ordered two train stations evacuated and service at both stations was stopped. They said there were indications that a terror attack was being planned. Russia closed off Moscow's iconic Red Square, a popular spot for revelers, in a rare move appeared aimed at concerns of terrorism. Here in the United States, security is tight in New York as revelers ring in 2016, just an hour from now in Times Square. In downtown Dubai, a massive fireworks display took place at midnight local time, even as a massive fire burned at a luxury hotel, leaving at least 14 injured. All residents were evacuated from the 63-floor address hotel after it became engulfed in flames late Thursday. Officials say it is now 90% contained. VOA's Margaret Bashir was dining in a nearby restaurant across from the hotel.
It went up in flames immediately. It was amazing. We sat down at the table at like 9:15, and at 9:30 approximately local time, the fire started.
There is no word on the cause of the fire. The hotel stands across from the world's tallest skyscraper, the Burj Khalifa. Burkina Faso's Salif Diallo was elected head of the National Assembly, making the ally-turned opponent of ousted leader Blaise Compaoré the second most powerful man in the nation. He was elected a day after Roch-Marc Christian Kabore was sworn in as Burkina Faso's new president. This is VOA News. Iran's President Hassan Rouhani ordered his defense minister to expand Iran's ballistic missile program in response to a U.S. threat to impose new sanctions on that program following Iranian missile tests. In a tweet Thursday, President Rouhani said a new program will be developed to enhance Iran's missile capabilities if the U.S., in his words, continues its legitimate interference with Iran's right to defend itself. In response, a senior U.S. official told VOA the United States has long taken action to counter threats from Iran's missile program and will continue to do so. Iraqi Prime Minister Haider al-Abadi reiterated that Turkish military forces must withdraw immediately from Iraqi territory. In a phone call with Turkey's Prime Minister Ahmet Davutoğlu, Mr. Abadi questioned why Turkey would send its military trainers deep inside Iraqi borders while Islamic State fighters are present at Turkey's border with Syria. He accused Turkey of failing to respect an agreement to withdraw its troops from northern Iraq and threatened military action to defend Iraq's sovereignty. Residents in parts of the American Midwest are packing sandbags and shoring up levees, trying to save their homes and businesses from the region's worst flooding in decades. At least 20 people have been killed and hundreds of homes and businesses swamped by water in Missouri and Illinois. All that happened after a massive storm system dumped as much as 30 centimeters of rain in some areas. The first export of U.S. crude oil in four decades left a Texas port Thursday, just weeks after a ban on such exports was lifted. The ship is carrying a cargo of oil from ConocoPhillips in South Texas that was sold to a Swiss trading house. Burundian President Pierre Nkurunziza says he'll consider any deployment of African Union peacekeepers in his nation an attack requiring a counterstrike. Mr. Nkurunziza addressed the nation Wednesday. He is facing increasing opposition from the AU and the international community over his quest to extend his tenure as president. The Republic of Congo will be holding its presidential election in March. That follows a recent approval of a new constitution allowing President Denis Sassou Nguesso to run for another term. He has not yet decided. The tiny word so tops this year's list of words or phrases people would like to see banished from use. So it's getting really annoying. So can we please put a stop to this? Said David G. Simpson, who nominated the word to be included in the list compiled by Lake Superior State University in Michigan. Rounding out the top five on the list of words banished from the Queen's English for misuse, overuse, and general uselessness were join the conversation, break the internet, walk it back, and presser. I'm Ray Kugel in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Mbate in Washington. Today is Friday, January 1st, New Year's Day 2016. And here are some of the stories we are covering. South Sudan's rebel leader says 2016 will be a year of peace.
Well, first of all, let me take this opportunity for wishing people of South Sudan a happy new year. It will be a year of peace where our people will enjoy peace which they have lacked for the last 2 years.
That's former South Sudan Vice President and rebel leader Riek Machar. Burundi's president's threat to attack African Union peacekeepers draws sharp criticism. Junior and mid-level doctors and nurses in Zimbabwe are threatening to strike today, Friday. And Nigeria's President Muhammadu Buhari will leave no stone unturned when it comes to prosecuting current officials and ruling party members.
General Buhari will not spare anybody, whether he is a member of the APC or not, who is proven or alleged to have been corrupt.
Lai Mohammed is Nigeria's information minister. Carol Pearson will look back at 2015 and how West Africa overcame Ebola. And Egypt's tourism industry seeks new markets after a devastating year. Those stories plus Marco Uman Sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Former South Sudan Vice President and rebel leader Riek Machar has assured the people of South Sudan that 2016 will be the year of peace. He says his rebel group is working hard to make sure that the people get the peace they have been yearning for since the start of the civil war more than 21 months ago. Machar said he and his group are committed to the complete implementation of the August peace agreement. But he says President Salva Kiir's creation of 28 new states without consultation has become an obstacle to the implementation.
First of all, let me take this opportunity for wishing people of South Sudan a happy new year. It will be a year of peace where our people will enjoy peace which they have lacked for the last 2 years. So we're working hard to ensure that the peace agreement which we signed on the 17th of August 2015 is implemented. What we have now done is we have sent the first group of our advanced team to Juba, and they have started engaging the government to implement the peace agreement. Although there are still problems which are happening, for example, the government has declared 28 states, which is contradicting the peace agreement because the peace agreement is based on 10.
Dr. Machar, the government has accused you that you had created 21 states. So what they did is in line with the transitional constitution of South Sudan. Now, given what you are saying, can you assure the South Sudan people that your side and the government side can go past this obstacle that you're talking about?
We created 21 states before we signed the peace agreement, okay? They created 28 states after, and actually 39 days after they signed the peace agreement. We did not go ahead with 21 states which we created. But after the peace agreement, they created 28 states. And what is bad is not the establishment of the 28 states. It is the fact that the states they establish are going to cause border wars between communities.
If that is the case, Dr. Machar, why do you think President Salva Kiir went ahead to still do that?
Well, I think he found that the idea of federalism, the idea of creating more states in South Sudan was popular. I think that's the reason he decided to adopt our position, but he adopted it too late. Now he will be in loggerhead with the grantors of the peace agreement.
Now, your advanced team has been in Juba now for a week or more. How do you think talks are going on the implementation of the peace accord, particularly security arrangements? How are things going?
Well, first of all, our advanced team under the leadership of General Thabandeng has done a wonderful job. They met the president more than 3 times. They met the vice president. They met the Speaker of the National Assembly. They met all those who are important. So they have done a good job. Now coming to the security aspect, our forces, we are preparing them to be transported to go to Juba per the agreement. And also the Joint Integrated Police, we are preparing them to go to Juba. We believe by mid-January they should be in Juba.
Under the August peace agreement, a transitional government is supposed to be created and you are supposed to be the deputy president. Given what has happened, there are some people who are not very sure whether you and the president can ever work together.
Let me speak from my side. From my side, I am committed to implement the peace agreement with whoever is there. Currently, now it is President Al-Fakir. I believe if we follow the text and the spirit of the peace agreement, we will implement the peace agreement.
Dr. Masha, let me wish you and the people of South Sudan Happy New Year.
Thank you, James. I wish you also a Happy New Year. And I'm happy my people in South Sudan will enjoy peace during this coming year. Thank you.
Riek Machar is the former South Sudan vice president and rebel leader. He was speaking with me from the rebel headquarters in Pagak, South Sudan. Nigeria's president, Muhammadu Buhari, says he will leave no stone unturned when it comes to prosecuting cabinet members or any member of the ruling All Progressives Congress Party who are found to be corrupt. But in a media chat Wednesday this week, his first since coming into office this year, Buhari maintained that none of his cabinet ministers are corrupt. His statement came after the opposition People's Democratic Party, the PDP, demanded an investigation into alleged misuse of security funds by senior officials of the administration. Information Minister Lai Mohammed dismissed suggestions that the government's fight against corruption targets only officials of former President Goodluck Jonathan.
General Buhari will not spare anybody, whether he is a member of the APC or not, who is proven or alleged to have been corrupt. Now, it's only natural that after 16 years in power, if there's going to be any probe today or there's going to be any fight against corruption, the most likely people will be those who had held the reins of power. The government is going out with hard facts, documents of transactions, account numbers and how much has been paid to which account. This is what I call, you know, fighting corruption, you know, not just, you know, mudslinging.
The president has said, and one of his ministers has also said, that some people who have committed financial malfeasance or malpractices or embezzled public funds appear to be bringing some of the stolen funds back. Now, the question is, if this information is credible, why isn't the government publishing these names with the intention of prosecuting them to serve as a deterrent?
Well, I think it is true that some people have returned their loot, but it would be a bit premature right now to start publishing the names of those who have done so. Secondly, as Mr. President also explained, it might not even help further investigation, because if a person has, you know, returned X amount of money, and you publish that he has returned X amount of money, the next person would not want to return more than that. So I think for some strategic and security reasons, it is not prudent at this point in time to make public those who have returned and how much they have done. So, but in the fullness of time, it will be done.
What do you say to critics who say that the fight against corruption appeared to have stalled, except that President Buhari seemed to be going after his supposed political enemies, in this case, Dambo Dasuki and a few officials of the former administration?
You know, I think they have gotten it wrong completely. The fight against corruption, you know, under Buhari has really, you know, succeeded, you know, in even changing the perception. See, before now, corruption was celebrated in Nigeria. Corrupt figures, you know, actually dictated, you know, the affairs of the country. But today, the entire thing has changed. For the first time, Nigerians are now appreciating the fact that corruption is, you know, is a bad thing and that it's not a thing to be emulated.
Lau Mohammed, Nigeria's information minister, he spoke with reporter Peter Clotty from the commercial capital, Lagos. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butt in Washington. Today's Friday, January 1st, New Year's Day 2016. And we want to wish you, our dedicated listeners, a happy new year. Please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is 15 minutes past the hour. Burundi's entrenched president says he will consider an ending deployment of African Union peacekeepers in his troubled nation, an attack to which he will strike back. The pronouncement has sent shockwaves through the international community and has left many wondering what the AU will do next. From Johannesburg, VOA's Anita Powell reports.
Speaking to the nation Wednesday, after weeks of violence, Burundi's increasingly cornered president, Pierre Nkurunziza, launched a stunning verbal parry to an African Union proposal to send in 5,000 peacekeepers, saying the country will have been attacked and it will respond. Nkurunziza faces increasing opposition from the AU and the international community over his unpopular quest to extend his tenure as president of the tiny Central African nation. He weathered a May coup attempt and won a disputed election in July, though violence has continued. South Africa-based analyst Stephanie Walters described Nkurunziza's words as incredibly irresponsible, especially as negotiators are meeting in Uganda to try to hash out a peace deal. Walters is head of the Conflict Prevention and Risk Analysis Program at the Pretoria-based Institute for Security Studies.
I think the fact that Nkurunziza has said that he will attack African Union troops, it's not a blow to the AU. It makes his government look entirely irresponsible. It makes his government look like a government that doesn't want to resolve a crisis. The African Union now, of course, is going to have to figure out how tough it wants to be in response to that.
This, she says, is new territory for the continental body, which has only in recent years begun to flex its muscles in terms of peace and security issues on the continent. The AU has the law on its side and could simply send in troops anyway. But she suggested instead of overruling the president, the African Union put the peacekeeping plan on pause and strike a deal to round out its complement of neutral military and civilian observers in Burundi. And she notes that Nkurunziza's threat against AU troops may even backfire. In recent years, Burundi has been an active contributor to AU peacekeeping missions, which means that Burundian soldiers may find themselves face-to-face with their former battle buddies.
Nkurunziza may well say, we're going to combat AU forces, but there's really no guarantee that the army is going to do that. In fact, this is a key point here. The army has been less than willing to participate in Nkurunziza's crackdowns on civilians. And so his threat may very well be very hollow. That may very well be the point at which the army says, that's it, we've had enough of this guy. We're not going to go combating African Union troops who sometimes we fight alongside.
And over all of this hovers the specter of regional conflict, messy politics, and ethnic violence. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
Zimbabwe is bracing for an industrial action today, Friday, by junior and mid-level doctors and nurses who have rejected government's offer of a $2 a day transportation fee to last them through January 5th, when their salaries and bonuses are expected to reach their bank accounts. Blessing Zulu of VOA Zimbabwe's service looks at the crisis in Zimbabwe.
The president of the Zimbabwe Hospital Doctors Association, Dr. Fortune Nyamande, says there is no going back on their industrial action as the money being offered by government to meet their transport demands is an insult.
I think the figures which are being circulated are insulting. They are not even a word for us to mention on air. Well, we understand that they want to give doctors $2 to fill their cars so that they can go to work. So surely, how can someone go to a service station and put a liter of fuel? You know, a respectable person like a doctor or a nurse in our society. I'm sure this is insulting. It's not well thought out.
Dr. Nyamande says the promise by the government to pay health workers on the 5th of January is incensing them. Reached for comment, the executive director of the Health Services Board, Dr. Love Mombengeranwa, said he was on holiday.
Can you talk to Dr. Tabo? Unfortunately, I'm driving. I can't retrieve your number. But if you phone our offices, they'll tell you. I'm on leave. I've been on leave for the past 2 weeks.
Dr. Mbengeranwa referred all further questions on salaries to Finance Minister Patrick Chinamasa, who, together with Health Minister Dr. David Parrenyatwa, were not picking their mobile phones.
And what you're telling me, for me, is news, because what we've been told, I saw the minister the other day persuading them to come to work. Today I saw a headline saying that they'll be given money to go to work and so on.
And the whole thing is between Treasury and the workers. It's a bit more complicated.
But Permanent Secretary in the Ministry of Finance, Dr. William Manungo, had this brief response when reached for comment.
Can you call me maybe in about 2 hours while I'm driving?
Meanwhile, as the situation gets desperate, Central Bank Chief Dr. John Mangujga yesterday met with representative of the workers in the public service. Secretary General Raymond Majongwe of the Progressive Teachers Union of Zimbabwe says Dr. Mangujga arranged the meeting.
Yes, it was a meeting at the behest of Dr. Mangujga, and I would want to thank him at least whether he did it on his own or he was sent by the politicians, but the most important thing, the meeting went ahead.
On the issue of bonuses, Majongwe says it is clear from their interaction with the central bank chief that there are bound to be very long delays. Dr. Mangujga confirmed holding the meeting, saying they are routine as he prepares for his monetary policy statement next month. Workers, though, said they would have wanted officials from the Ministry of Finance to be present. Public Service Association Chairperson Jeremiah Virindi said government's inability to communicate effectively had made things worse and created an atmosphere of mistrust between the employer and workers. This is Blessing Zulu in Washington, D.C.
Ebola claimed 3,000 more lives in West Africa in 2015, but by the end of the year, the virus had been defeated. VOA's Carol Pearson has more.
The past year saw lots of ups and downs in West Africa. Elation when Liberia was declared Ebola-free in May. Defeat when it returned and claimed more victims, although the virus was quickly suppressed. Sierra Leone was declared Ebola-free in November. Then, after 2 years battling the deadly virus, Guinea was declared Ebola-free. Dr. Bruce Aylward, the World Health Organization's special representative for Ebola, made the announcement just before the year's end.
For the first time in 2 years, we can say that all three countries have stopped the original chains of transmission.
The World Health Organization said the epidemic got its start in December 2013 when a toddler caught the virus in the forest region of Guinea. Ebola killed 11,000 people and sickened more than 28,000. Experts like Dr. Anthony Fauci at the National Institutes of Health warned that the virus can reemerge.
All of us in the public health sector believe that there will be other Ebola outbreaks, and that's the reason why we need to be prepared.
Dr. Tom Frieden, head of the Centers for Disease Control, told VOA in 2014 that when all was said and done, the goal was to leave Guinea, Liberia, and Sierra Leone with stronger health systems.
What we hope will happen coming out of this is that we not only stop this outbreak, but we put into place the labs and staff and emergency response capacity to stop the next Ebola or the next health threat.
There's yet another reason experts do not expect another devastating epidemic. There's now a vaccine that can stop Ebola. It was proven highly effective in clinical trials that took place in early 2014. The WHO says its goal now is to revitalize key public health programs in the three countries, especially maternal and child health. And the World Bank Group announced it has mobilized more than $1.5 billion in financing for Ebola response and economic recovery. Carol Pearson, VOA News, Washington.
The Egyptian tourism industry had high hopes for 2015, beginning the year with a plan to return revenue to pre-Arab Spring levels. Instead, the industry suffered major blows from insecurity. Tourism officials are now seeking to attract business from alternative markets. VOA's Heather Murdoch has more from Egypt's flagship resort town of Sharm el-Sheikh.
The shores of this resort city are usually packed during the holiday season. But after a Russian plane, which had taken off from here, crashed in late October, killing all 224 people on board in an apparent terrorist attack, business has plummeted. Business owners say most of their income used to come from Russian and British tourists. But both countries have suspended direct flights to Sharm el-Sheikh.
There is no work. They say we're operating at 30% or 35% capacity, but there's nothing.
officials are actively courting tourists from Saudi Arabia and other wealthy Arab countries. But workers say the increase in business from the Gulf has not been nearly enough to make up for their losses. The tourism sector, one of Egypt's largest industries and main sources of foreign income, has been reeling since the uprising in 2011. Egyptian tourists, who now appear to make up the bulk of the visitors here in Sharm el-Sheikh, say fear may be keeping people away, but daily life for vacationers has not changed.
It's a beautiful city. I visit many places. I went to Paris, London, Zurich, Switzerland, Arabic countries, many of them, but I didn't find a city like this city. It's so beautiful, really.
Officials had hoped 2015 would see the complete recovery of the industry after a nearly 30% increase in 2014. But the plane crash and the killing of 8 Mexican tourists who were mistaken for militants by the Egyptian military while on a desert safari in September have left many attractions across Egypt desolate.
We don't know what will happen after 5 minutes, so we cannot talk about next year.
Officials trying to revive the industry say they are hopeful 2016 will be better. Egypt's natural and ancient treasures may attract different groups at different times, they say. But in the end, the visitors will always come back. Heather Murdoch, VOA News, Sharm el-Sheikh, Egypt.
Now for Daybreak Africa Sports, here is Mark Owuma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Very good Friday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we begin with football. Liberia Football Federation President Musa Hassan Bility will not contest the FIFA presidential elections after his appeal to the Court of Arbitration in Sports, CAS, was rejected, CAS disclosed in Lausanne, Switzerland on Thursday. Bility appealed to CAS after the FIFA ad hoc electoral committee declined to clear him to stand for the FIFA presidential elections on the 12th of November. CAS has upheld the decision by the FIFA Ethics Committee's investigatory chamber that Bility fails to pass the integrity check. CAS is the world's highest authority in arbitration in sports disputes. Therefore, their ruling is binding on all parties. Staying in Switzerland, Switzerland's Federal Office of Justice has handed the first batch of evidence to the United States Department of Justice for its investigation into alleged bribery schemes for football marketing rights, the Swiss justice authorities revealed in Bern. Prominent FIFA officials, past and present, are under investigation by prosecutors in Switzerland and the United States of America in connection with alleged bribes and kickback schemes totaling over $200 million. The Swiss justice authorities further disclosed that they have frozen $80 million in assets in 13 Swiss FIFA bank accounts following the United States' request for legal assistance with these investigations. On a more cheerful note, Zimbabwe has registered their teams for the 2017 Confederation of Africa Football Under 17 and Under 20 competitions. The newly elected Zimbabwe Football Association President Philip Chiyangwa disclosed in Harare on Thursday. Zimbabwe has been out of action in these two age group competitions since 2012. Chiyangwa says he's fulfilling his campaign pledge to revive the junior national teams. He hopes this will unearth fresh talent which should be nurtured for their 2022 FIFA World Cup qualifying campaign. Finally, in handball, hosts Tunisia edged Saudi Arabia 25-23 in a friendly match played in Hammamet, some 65 kilometers southeast of the capital Tunis. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa, wishing you all a happy and prosperous new year. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark, and Happy New Year to you and your family. And we hope you have a very good weekend. And that's it for this Friday, this January 1st edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I'm James Barton, Washington, saying every new year comes with greater challenges and obstacles in life. I wish you courage, hope, and faith to overcome any hurdle that you may face this year. Happy New Year and have a very good weekend.